1-800-395-7732 or on the web at kpfa.org. And we can also clothe any part of your body, give you things to carry, hot stuff in, cold stuff in, whatever it is, socks to caps to hoodies and back. All that stuff is available at kpfa.org. Check that out. But please, if you can, we've got 2.5 minutes with 7 people on the line. This is our chance to see if we can make this $2,000 match. We are $200 short of our $2,000 match with 2 minutes and 30 seconds to go. $200 short with 2 minutes to go. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Let's see if we can kick this up now. Let's see if we can take it up, pick up speed, really jump it on up in these last minute and a half. 2 minutes to go. 1-800-439-5732. We are at $3,921. We are $80 short of making this wonderful $2,000 match. 1-800-439-5732. Boy, I would like to see this happen before we have to go out of here in a minute and a half. $3,921. Will we make it? 90 seconds. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Can we pick this up? Can we make this happen now with 1 minute left to go? Ladies and gentlemen, we are at 4,871, heading for $5,000. We've got 30 seconds and we can break $5,000. Oh my God. The people have risen up. They have stepped forward. Yes. Oh yes. We have 30 seconds to go. You can still get in there and take us over.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hello, I'm Bob Madar. Join me for episode 5 of the third season of Local Folks Podcast and meet Rick, the manager of Project Action at the Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center. Rick was formerly homeless and now devotes his time to helping local folks who are homeless change their lives and find employment and housing. You can find local folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folk.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11:02 a.m. Next up, we have Food Sleuth Radio, where we'll hear from research scientist Laurel Shader about the harmful chemicals in everyday cookware, like nonstick pans, grease-proof food packaging, and even dental floss. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven natural foods cooperative open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a weekly farmers market every Wednesday, year-round. Located at Southeast Tibbet Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years. Online at peoples.coop.
Hi, Welcome to Food Sleuth Radio, where we help you think beyond your plate. I am Melinda Hemmelgarn, a registered dietitian and investigative nutritionist on a mission to connect the dots between food, health, and agriculture and find food truth. And today, I am honored to welcome my guest, Dr. Laurel Shader. She is a research scientist at the Silent Spring Institute, where she leads the Institute's water quality research on highly fluorinated chemicals, which you may have heard referred to as PFAS or PFAS, P-F-A-A-S. And other contaminants of emerging concern. Her research focuses on characterizing PFAS exposures from drinking water, understanding the health effects associated with these compounds, identifying other sources of these exposures, such as food packaging, and investigating the socioeconomic disparities in exposures to drinking water contaminants. Dr. Shader has gained nationwide recognition as an expert on PFAS contamination and water quality. She has been quoted widely and interviewed widely on NPR. She's been interviewed in the Washington Post, the Dr. Oz Show, Chemical and Engineering News, and Environmental Health News. She is a technical advisor on community assistance and is vice chair of the Contaminants of Emerging Concern Committee for the New England Water Environment Association. Dr. Shader earned her MS and PhD in environmental engineering at the University of California, Berkeley, and an SB in environmental engineering science from MIT. She has taught ecology and environmental engineering courses at MIT and Northeastern University, and she currently holds an appointment as a visiting scientist at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Welcome, Dr. Shader.
Thank you so much for having me.
What is an SB?
It's a bachelor's degree.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's a BS, but at MIT we called it an SB.
Okay. All right. Well, you've got a solid background in environmental issues, and that's exactly what we need in explaining what PFAS are. And as we were talking prior to the show, we were talking about some of the different titles and names that these compounds have, and they're really complicated. And I think for the average person, you know, highly fluorinated chemicals, what are they and where are they in our environment?
So PFAS represents the name of a broad family of chemicals. So PFAS itself stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which is a whole mouthful to say. It's thought that there are at least 4,700 PFAS compounds on the global market. And while PFAS itself may not be a household name, there are many everyday products that we're all familiar with that contain PFAS. So these are widely used in a whole host of nonstick, stain-resistant, waterproof, and grease-proof products. So think of your Gore-Tex jacket or Scotch-guarded carpets or upholstery, Teflon pans, and they're in products where we might not suspect they'd show up. Certain types of dental floss, microwave popcorn bags, and fast food wrappers. So these are a part of our daily lives, and they go by many different names for the individual chemicals, so PFOS, PFOA. So the terminology is quite complicated. Some people just call them forever chemicals because they are highly fluorinated chemicals, and those carbon-fluorine bonds are super strong. So the chemical structures are very resistant to degradation. So some people think that they might persist on geological timescales.
Oh my goodness. So we should talk about some of the health risks associated with these chemicals. For people who have greater exposures, and I've looked at different maps, and it looks like there are some hot spots with regard to contaminated water. So the Northeast is one. I saw some places in California that had heavier contamination in their water supplies than others, but they appear to be ubiquitous across the country for the reasons that you mentioned. They're in everything. But what are some of the specific health risks associated with exposures to these compounds?
So PFAS are a really wide range of chemicals. Most of the information about health effects that we have focus just on a handful, PFOS, PFOA, and several other related chemicals within this much broader family. So researchers have found associations between PFAS exposure and a wide range of health effects. including effects on the thyroid, high cholesterol, obesity, low birth weight, cancer, and effects on the immune system.
Now, I have a fact sheet that the Silent Spring Institute produced just talking about some of the risks associated with these compounds and where we find them. And I was quite surprised, shocked, dismayed to find that more than 98% of Americans have PFAS in their blood, and some of these chemicals can remain in the body for years. What are the routes of excretion? I'm assuming possibly urine, but maybe also breast milk?
That's right. So, as you mentioned, virtually all Americans contain traces of PFAS in our bodies, and we can be exposed to PFAS through food. In some communities, as you mentioned, drinking water can be a source of exposure because of contamination. Also, direct contact with consumer products, indoor air, and dust that might pick up traces of PFAS from the products in our homes. Some PFAS linger in our bodies for many years. They can be reabsorbed by our kidneys and circulate within our blood. So they're very difficult for our bodies to excrete these chemicals. Unfortunately, mothers can pass these chemicals along to their children. So we know that some portion of PFAS in a mother's body does get passed to her children during pregnancy, and they can also be passed along in breast milk.
Are they located or stored primarily in the body's fat tissue?
This is a great question, and one of many questions that researchers are trying to figure out. Where in the body do these accumulate? They're a little bit different than some other contaminants that seem to mostly be associated with the fat reserves in our body. PFAS tend to bind to proteins, so they do accumulate in blood and bind to proteins in the blood. But not so much in the fat. But again, this is a wide range of chemicals, and each one has its own slightly different characteristics. So we know PFOS and PFOA and other what we call long-chain chemicals accumulate in blood. Now, instead of these longer-chain compounds, manufacturers are making different shorter-chain or different alternative PFAS chemicals, and we don't actually know in our bodies where those might end up. But early evidence suggests that they may have different patterns of accumulation than the long-chain ones that have been more studied.
Has there been any movement to ban the production of these chemicals? And I'm assuming that with the production, the areas of the country where these compounds are produced, the workers are more likely to be contaminated with them. But has there been any policy movement to get these compounds banned?
So there have been shifts in production over time. You're absolutely right that workers in chemical manufacturing facilities have higher exposures, and people who live in communities near where PFAS chemicals are produced can have higher exposures because of contamination of the local environment. Some PFAS chemicals are no longer manufactured in the U.S., like PFOS and PFOA. They still are manufactured in other parts of the world, namely in China, but they're not made in the U.S. anymore. They're still part of our environment and will remain so for long periods of time. In their place, manufacturers are now creating other PFAS chemicals, and some scientists and advocacy groups would like to see more of a class-based approach to PFAS rather than treating these one at a time, just PFOS or just PFOA, restricting the use of the whole class of chemicals. And this is actually happening more at the local and the state level. So, for instance, the state of Washington and the city of San Francisco have banned PFAS in certain types of food packaging, and other states are considering similar regulations. And there are also retailers who are choosing not to sell products that contain PFAS. So recently, the Home Depot announced that they would no longer sell carpets treated with PFAS-containing coatings.
That's fantastic. So the reason that I became interested in these compounds, it's twofold. One, the nonstick pans were, of course, have been popular. And I recall working in extension at the time And being told that there's nothing to worry about with a Teflon-coated pan, it's totally safe as long as the Teflon is intact. And now I'm wondering, what should the recommendations really be with regard to a Teflon-coated pan? Even if it is intact, no chips, is it safe to use, or do PFAS compounds, are they released from the Teflon and does it get into the food?
Mm-hmm. I think this is another area where questions remain. Certainly, I would say the recommendation would be not to buy new Teflon pans because there are other alternatives for types of cookware that avoid these highly persistent chemicals. It's true that the Teflon molecules themselves are these very long fluorinated carbon chains that are really much too big to be absorbed by the cells of our bodies. However, there are still concerns about the manufacturing of Teflon and Teflon pans once they get old and the Teflon is scraping off. There are also concerns about Teflon being overheated. So there's actually toxic fumes that can be created when a Teflon pan gets too hot, and birds are particularly vulnerable to the fumes that are produced from an overheated Teflon pan. I have to imagine that that's not great for people either. Great. So I would think that a Teflon pan that is not flaking off, that is not overheated, is unlikely to be a major source of PFAS exposure, but the presence of them in products still raises concerns.
So this is fascinating to me. So an overheated Teflon pan releases fumes that were found to be toxic to birds. How was that discovered?
I actually don't know how that was discovered, but often the manufacturers of the pans have that warning information. I don't know who first discovered that.
Right. I mean, it's so interesting when you find out who was harmed and how was this research done? Like, who even thought to connect those dots? So the first issue, as I mentioned, that piqued my interest about these compounds had to do with the Teflon pans that have been around for a long time. But the second piece of research that started coming up in my inbox that really concerned me had to do with these wrappers that are ubiquitous when you go out and buy food. So fast food wrappers, the boxes say that the French fries come in, the microwave popcorn bags, the boxes where that pizza comes in, anything that has sort of this nonstick coating. And then there was also another piece from the Silent Spring Institute that looked at all of the different fast food manufacturers and whether or not their wraps contained PFAS. And I couldn't believe all of them essentially came up. All of the popular fast food restaurants that people would know, KFC, McDonald's, Pizza Hut, Starbucks, all of these, the researchers found fluorinated chemicals in the food wrap. So tell me more about some of this research and how it came about. How did we discover this?
So you're referring to a paper that Silent Spring Institute and others published in 2017 where we looked for PFAS in fast food wrappers. And we found that they were common, especially in papers, kind of that wax paper consistency kind of paper, say for cookie pouches, or wrappers on burgers or burritos or sandwiches. We did find PFAS in some of the thicker kinds of boxes, say to hold French fries or certain types of sandwiches, but the papers were most likely to contain PFAS. And these chemicals are added to make the papers greaseproof so that when we're eating on the go that our hands don't get greasy. Unfortunately, those chemicals are likely to persist long after we finish using those products. Other studies have also found that nearly all microwave popcorn bags in the U.S. have PFAS. Again, they're added to ensure that the buttery additives in that microwave popcorn doesn't seep through the paper. And other types of packaging as well. You mentioned pizza boxes can also contain PFAS.
Well, that's just one more reason to eat more meals at home and not out on the road. I know that Americans are just, we like our fast food, but gosh, this is just another really good reason to eat less fast food. I need to take one break because we're at our halfway point and remind our listeners that if you're just joining us, you're tuned into Food Sleuth Radio. We are joined by Dr. Laurel Shader. She is a research scientist at Silent Spring Institute, where she leads the Institute's water quality research on highly fluorinated chemicals, what we've been calling PFAS here in our discussion. She is known as a national expert on these contaminants. Well, what would you like our listeners to know about these compounds?
I think it's important for consumers to know that PFAS pose health concerns, that PFAS exposures have been linked with a wide range of health effects. And I think it's important for your listeners to know that there are some things that we can do to reduce our exposures to these chemicals. They're common in many everyday products, such as microwave popcorn bags, and that seems like an easy one. I personally like to make popcorn on the stove rather than using microwave popcorn bags. So there are some relatively easy ways that we can avoid PFAS. When we're getting new carpets or furniture, we can decide to skip the stain-resistant coatings. But there are also many uses that are more difficult to avoid. When we go out to eat fast food, there's really no way to tell by looking at a wrapper whether it's likely to have PFAS or not. So I think that it's important to remember there are things that we can do collectively. There are many states that are considering different types of regulations, for instance, banning PFAS in food packaging, which is one way not only to reduce our exposures while we're using those products, but to reduce the amount of PFAS getting out into the environment. And we can tell retailers where we buy things that we don't want PFAS or other chemicals that are raise health concerns and are very persistent. We don't want to buy products that contain those types of chemicals. And in fact, retailers are taking the lead, such as Home Depot, to not sell carpets or not sell other products that contain PFAS.
Mm-hmm. The American President's Cancer Panel report that came out in 2009-2010 that recommended that every American filter their water. And this goes beyond, is probably including, but also beyond PFAS. It's also all kinds of contaminants that end up either through agricultural methods or industrial methods that contaminants get into our water supply. And one of the recommendations from the Silent Spring Institute is also to use a solid block or granulated carbon filters to purify our drinking water. Is there a kind of filter that you would recommend more over another in terms of helping to protect the end consumer?
So you mentioned the President's Cancer Panel that recommended water filtration, and I believe that was motivated, at least in part, by the potential for disinfection byproducts in water that is chlorinated or treated with other chemical disinfectants.
Mm-hmm.
Chlorine-based chemicals are very important for public health to make sure that pathogens, that harmful bacteria and other microorganisms don't grow in the water supply and expose us to potentially harmful diseases. However, those same chemicals can react with the other chemicals in the water and create cancer-causing chemicals. So that recommendation was intended, at least in part, to filter out those contaminants or those, they're called disinfection byproducts, right at the point of use when people are drinking that water. For consumers, whether you're on a private well or a public water supply, I think it's really important for people to learn more about where their water comes from and whether there are any contaminants in their water. So for people who rely on a public water supply, that type of information is available in annual reports. They're called consumer confidence reports that each public water supply produces each year. For people who have a private well, they're on their own for monitoring their water quality, and it is important to do at least some basic testing on a regular basis to keep an eye on water quality. When consumers are considering buying a water filter, it's important to know about the types of contaminants that are in their water, because there's no one type of filter that will get everything out of your water. So it's important to know what specific contaminants are of concern. We know that in communities across the country, people are discovering that PFAS are showing up in their drinking water. And this can be related to the use of certain firefighting foams at military bases or airports or other fire training areas. It can also be related to certain industries. And public water supplies often take steps to remove PFAS from the water, either shutting off those contaminated sources or installing new types of treatment, but consumers can also take steps in their own home if they're concerned about PFAS and want to remove them from their water. The two main types of treatments that are effective for PFAS are activated carbon and reverse osmosis. So activated carbon comes in two main varieties. You know, we're all familiar with filter pitchers that have those little black particles. That's activated carbon. And then there are also solid carbon block filters. These are often under people's sinks. They both kind of work on the same principles. The solid carbon block filter has more surface area for trapping more of the contaminants. Activated carbon is very effective at removing PFAS and PFOA and other long-chain PFAS, which have been the focus for drinking water guidelines. Over the lifetime of the filter, they're not as good at removing the shorter chain replacement chemicals that are now more commonly used. Reverse osmosis does a better job of removing both the long chain and the shorter chain alternative compounds. It is more expensive, and it does create a stream of wastewater because there are several gallons of water produced that aren't used for every gallon of clean water.
Mm-hmm.
It's more expensive. So there are trade-offs to every type of filtration technology. But again, it's important to learn more about what's in your water and then figure out what type of treatment makes sense for you.
Right. And do typical municipalities monitor for PFAS?
So this is a great question. So currently there are no federal drinking water standards for any PFAS chemicals. So there is no ongoing monitoring required at the federal level under the Safe Drinking Water Act. There was a nationwide program from 2013 to 2015 that required some testing of large public water supplies, but that was just for that period of time, and there has been no routine monitoring required after that. There are some states that are stepping up and creating their own standards and creating requirements for more testing. So in some states, water supplies do have more recent information about their PFAS levels. So it depends a lot where you live.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is so disturbing, really, when you start thinking about all of the different contaminants out there and how we all want to protect our families. And ultimately, if from my perspective anyway, it seems that policy from a national level would be the way to go. But unfortunately, we are not living in a good time for upping regulations to protect public health. So we're on our own to a large degree, which is why I think your tips to reduce exposure are so important. I want to get back to food packaging for a moment, because that's something that's so near and dear to our hearts. We eat every day, three times a day at least. Let's talk about some alternatives. If we make a sandwich, say from home, we decide, I'm not going to go to the fast food restaurant, I'm going to make my own sandwich. I'm not a big fan of wrapping foods in plastic wrap. What about wax paper or parchment paper? Do you know if those two items are free of PFAS?
That's a great question. I do believe that those are free of PFAS, although I'm not aware that most of them have been tested. I share your concern about plastic wrap and plastic boxes. There are also steel reusable containers that can be reused rather than paper or plastic that might get thrown out.
Yes. I always recommend using those glass containers because they can go from freezer to microwave. They're not going to shatter. And it's so much more healthy from a public health perspective to use something that's inert. So like you say, the stainless steel water bottles instead of plastic and glass containers.
Absolutely. I don't send them, when my children go to school, though, I don't put glass containers in their lunchbox in case they throw their backpack around. But there are other options like the steel sandwich containers and snack containers as well.
That's right.
I think thinking about what our grandparents might have used, going back to more natural or more inert kinds of products in general is a good rule of thumb.
Well, I know that a lot of your research prior to coming to Silent Spring was looking at mercury in water. And I wonder, with regard to the PFAS in the water, with mercury, every state has a warning for pregnant women. Don't eat so many fish servings per week or per month if you're pregnant. Should we assume the same for PFAS, especially if we are finding PFAS in the water? Should we naturally assume that they would be in fish?
So within this broad class of PFAS chemicals, there are some that bioaccumulate and can increase in concentration as you go up the food chain, just like mercury. And there has been some testing for PFAS, and the long chain PFAS like PFOS and other longer compounds tend to be the ones that accumulate to higher degrees in fish. There's also been some testing of deer in Michigan near a location with high contamination. So at this point, there is, has been some testing, I'd say not very extensive testing of PFAS in the environment. There is certainly the potential for bioaccumulation, and I think that's a challenge for state agencies when high levels are found, how to translate that into recommendations related to actual fish consumption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you find that many public health departments describe or talk about these compounds as much as they do, say, mercury?
Mercury has been a contaminant of concern for much longer, and we have a lot more information and more specific guidance in terms of acceptable levels. It's also just one chemical, whereas PFAS is this broad family of chemicals. Again, each one accumulates to a different degree in different types of organisms. So I think there's still a lot more information out there about mercury. And in some cases where, you know, high levels of PFAS have been found in fish, those are at the top of the food chain, those are also fish that accumulate high levels of mercury. So the guidance that has already been issued related to mercury consumption may be protective for PFOS as well, or PFAS chemicals. But over time, scientists are learning more and more about potential effects at lower levels. And so those guidelines may need to be reconsidered in the future.
Well, Dr. Shader, I am going to provide links to the wonderful information that's available on this topic at the Silent Spring Institute. I think it's some of the best that I have certainly found online. Is there any message that you want to leave our listeners with in the 30 seconds we have left?
I think PFAS are a really important class of chemicals for us to be aware of. They are somewhat unique in that they're not just in our environment and in water, but they're in our food and in our consumer products as well. So it's important for all of us to educate ourselves about what's in the products that we're buying, what's in our drinking water, and to let our elected officials and retailers know that we are concerned about these chemicals and we're looking for them to take collective action to protect everyone's health.
That's wonderful. And I will provide a link again to your website. In closing, I want to thank our listeners for joining us. I want to remind everyone that Food Sleuth Radio is produced by Dan Hemmelgarn at KOPN Studios in beautiful downtown Columbia, Missouri. Most of all, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Laurel Shader. She is a research scientist at Silent Spring Institute, where she leads the Institute's water quality research on highly fluorinated chemicals, also known as PFAS, and other contaminants of emerging concern. Thank you so much for explaining this issue to us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
This is From the Vault, the Pacifica Radio Archives weekly series, where we get to profile some of the amazing recordings in our 55,000 program collection going back to 1949. I'm your host, Mark Torres. On this week's From the Vault, we present Fidel Castro's 1995 address to the capacity 1,300 people in attendance at the Abyssinian Church in Harlem. He was in New York to address the United Nations 50th Anniversary General Assembly. But before we play this speech, we would like to share a short excerpt from Fidel Castro's first address to the United Nations from 1960. Here, Castro outlines the living conditions for most Cubans under the previous Batista dictatorship in Cuba.
Almost everyone could agree with Prime Minister Fidel Castro as he spoke before the United Nations last winter, discussing conditions in Cuba before the first measures of the revolutionary government went into effect.
And when the revolution was successful in Cuba, what did it uncover? What did it find? First of all, the revolution found that 600,000 Cubans, able and ready to work, were unemployed.
un número igual,
an equal number, proportionately,
al número de desempleados
to the number of unemployed in the United States
cuando la gran crisis
at the time
que sacudió
of the Great Depression
a este país,
that shook this country.
Eso que a poco produce una catástrofe.
And which almost produced
Estados Unidos,
a catastrophe in the United States. This
el desempleo
was what we met with.
En nuestra patria.
Permanent unemployment in my country.
3,500,000 personas,
3.5 million
de un total
out of a total population of more than 6 million
vivían en cabañas,
lived in huts,
barracones y tugurios,
slums,
sin las menores condiciones de habitabilidad,
without the slightest sanitary conditions or facilities. 37.5% of our population was illiterate.
No sabía leer ni escribir.
70% of our population, of our young rural population, lacked teachers.
El 2% de nuestra población estaba padeciendo
2% of our population was suffering from tuberculosis. 100,000 persons out of a total population of a little over 6 million were suffering from the ravages of tuberculosis. 95% of our infantile rural population was suffering from parasites.
La mortandad infantil, por tanto,
infant mortality was astronomical.
Era muy bajo.
And the standard of living was the opposite.
Los servicios públicos, compañías,
public services,
eléctricas,
electric,
compañías
telefónicas, electricity rather,
eran
telephone,
propiedades de monopolio,
all these belonged to American monopolies.
Una gran parte de la banca,
a major portion,
una gran parte del comercio,
of the banking business,
las refinerías,
of imports,
de petróleo,
the oil refineries,
la mayor parte,
the greater part,
de la producción azucarera,
of the sugar production,
las mejores tierras de Cuba,
the lion's share of the arable land of Cuba, and the most important industries in all fields of Cuba belonged to North American companies.
That was Fidel Castro addressing the United Nations General Assembly in 1960. Fidel Castro would address the United Nations General Assembly for 6 minutes in 1995 on the occasion of its 50th anniversary. But later that evening, on Sunday, October 22, 1995, he spoke to a packed audience in Harlem at the Abyssinian Church. Here's an excerpt from that address.
Queridos, o mejor dicho, queridísimos,
dear, or rather, very dear friends.
Algunos de los que me precedieron,
some of the speakers who preceded me,
decía que algunos se preguntaban,
I said that some of them were wondering,
¿por qué me recibían en esta
why was
iglesia?
It that I was being welcomed in this church?
Pero es que no solo algunos de ustedes,
but it happens that not only some of you, but
me recibían a mí.
I was also wondering why I was being welcomed
es
like this.
Yo mismo,
it is that I myself,
cuando me estaba vistiendo,
while I was getting dressed
para venir acá,
to come here tonight,
Me quité de todos los trajes.
I got rid of the business suit.
Y me puse esta ropa que es la que había usado.
I got rid of my business suit and then
años.
I went into this fatigues which I have been
hasta
wearing for so many years.
Internacional
I have been wearing
obligó.
This till international diplomacy has forced
no
me.
Hace mucho.
Not very long ago.
Y cada rato hay una reunión cumbre. Bueno,
once
ya.
In a while there are summit conferences and I have to dress up like an honorable gentleman in a business suit.
La reunión sobre desarrollo social.
There was another summit on social development.
Que si París.
And in Paris I had to pay a visit to that country, to
claro,
France.
En todos los lugares me bajo con este.
In every place, you know, I leave the
y
plane wearing
cambio.
My fatigues.
Las visitas,
and then I change for
museos,
those protocol visits,
todo.
I wear my business suits.
Y entonces, bien. No sé si me he ido civilizando.
I don't know if it is because I'm becoming more civilized.
Tampoco quería dar la impresión de ayudar que yo fuera a aparecer como un señor militar allí o algo de eso. Que yo no estudié esa carrera.
You know, I did not study the career of looking like a gentleman in a business suit.
A mí no me quedó más remedio que...
I only had to do it.
Tener que luchar.
And I did not study to be a politician. I had to.
Tener que aprender.
I had to learn the trade bueno, along the way.
Hicimos algunas guerras. Y lo interesante es que las ganamos.
And the interesting thing is that we waged a battle and we won.
La nuestra. Era muy difícil, pero no le voy a hacer esa historia.
It is very difficult, but I'm not going to tell you that old story.
Pero llegamos a ser muy poquito.
But there was a time in which we were only a few.
A veces menos de 10.
Sometimes there was a time in which we were less than 10.
A veces 12.
Sometimes we were 12.
Pero nuestros adversarios eran como 80.
But our adversaries.
Y al final en 25.
Though there were many, in 25 months.
Nuestra revolución venció.
Our revolution was victorious.
Lo venció de manera total en combate abierto.
We won in the open battles.
Estamos siendo guerrillas y después.
We were in the guerrilla forces.
Una combinación.
And then with a combination of irregular war.
Habíamos aprendido el oficio.
We learned the trade of guerrilla warfare.
Pero nos gustó a aquella ropa y nos quedamos con
but
ella,
we liked
¿no?
those fatigues that we wore at that time. And as I felt so comfortable in those fatigues, I kept wearing them all
bueno,
these years.
Les contaba
well,
que fui al hotel.
Anyway, I was telling
no,
you the story.
No, estoy en hotel. No,
I
no.
went to the hotel, not to the hotel, excuse
no, en
me.
La misión de la embajada.
I went to the Cuban mission.
A ponerme esta ropa.
To wear this fatigue, to go back into my fatigues because I had been wearing the business suit before.
Porque yo decía,
because I said to myself,
si la otra vez fui con esta ropa,
if the last time I went to Harlem I was wearing my fatigues,
¿cómo me voy a aparecer en Harlem?
How come I'm going to go to Harlem
vestido
dressed
de
in a business suit?
Pensaba en estas cosas, pero de repente se me ocurrió pensar lo
mismo
que
contaba. I was thinking about this, but after that I started thinking what I said before.
¿Qué hago yo en Harlem?
What am I going to do in Harlem?
Esta noche.
What am I going to do there tonight?
¿Qué hago?
What shall I do?
¿Qué digo?
What shall I say?
Porque yo, bueno, en las Naciones Unidas puedo decir algunas cosas.
I can say a few things at the United Nations.
Pero aquí no tenemos inmunidad parlamentaria.
But here we don't
nosotros.
Have immunity to go into certain subjects.
Tengo además, si allí soy cuidadoso.
There I have to be careful.
Aquí también lo tengo que ser.
But here I have to be cautious
too. Nadie vaya a pensar.
Nobody should believe
que yo me mezclo en los asuntos
that I'm interfering in internal affairs of this country.
Y yo yo le juro que no me voy a mezclar en nada que no sea justo.
I swear that I'm not going to get mixed up in anything that is not public.
Pero algunas cosas abstractas, genéricas,
only some abstract, some generic things, some philosophy.
Pero, ¿qué digo?
I said, what shall I say to them?
¿De qué hablo?
What shall I speak about?
Yo se me recordé que sí, que
then I remembered
tenía cosas que decir.
That yes, I had things to tell you.
Tenía cosas de qué hablo.
I had things to talk to you about.
Sin violar ninguna ley.
Without breaking any law.
Sin caer en una corte jurisdiccional.
Without having to be taken to a court.
Aunque espero que en ese caso ustedes me vayan a visitar.
Though I hope that in that case you will go to visit me.
Pero es que recortaba tanto aquellos días.
I was really recalling tanto, those days.
Y con tanta
you know,
gratitud.
Those days were coming back to my memory.
Yo decía, tengo que venir.
I remember with such appreciation those days in which I was here in this neighborhood.
Tengo que venir a saludar.
I said
a
to myself,
hermanos.
I have to go there and say hello to those
de
people.
Harlem.
Because it was in Harlem.
Y junto con ellos, a los hermanos,
where I have to go and visit there. And together with them, the Latin American, the Puerto Rican brothers and sisters.
Y algunos hablaron.
And some have been spoken here.
Había eventos, había cosas. Ayer creo que había una
I
comida.
Think that yesterday there was a dinner.
Yo creo que el alcalde dijo que yo
yes,
era un demonio.
Yes, but I think the mayor said that I was a demon.
Demonio no se le podía invitar a
and that a demon
comida.
Could not be invited to dinner.
Voy a pasar hambre el primer
I said,
día.
I'll go hungry the first day in New York.
Pues me dijeron que había un concierto.
After that I was told that there would be a concert.
Pero que invitaban las Naciones Unidas.
That the United Nations was extending the invitations.
Pero la orquesta era de la alcaldía.
But the orchestra was under the mayor.
La alcaldía dijo, o el alcalde.
And the mayor seemed to have said,
de ninguna manera
no way.
Orquesta podía tocar una
the orchestra
el
cannot play if the demon is in the hall.
Sí. Lo insólito.
It's really incredible.
Una familia amistosa.
It's outrageous because here there is a friendly family.
Rica. Empresaria.
A wealthy family.
Un grupo de empresarios.
And a group of businessmen.
Me invitaron.
Invited me last night for dinner.
Invitaron al demonio.
They invited the demon.
Paradojas.
It's a paradoxic.
Y debemos alegrarnos.
And we should be happy.
Porque son muchos más.
Because there are many more.
Los que comprenden.
The people who understand
cosas del bloqueo son
that
cosas
the blockade absurdas. And all those things are obsolete.
Son cosas locas.
That those are crazy things.
Y muchos hombres de empresa.
And many businessmen
se oponen hoy al
are
bloqueo.
Today opposed to the blockade.
Y luchan contra el
and they are striving against the blockade in their own way.
Ahora bien, yo no estoy aquí.
Now, I am not here
porque no me hayan invitado a una comida.
Because they did not invite me to dinner tonight.
Ayer.
Or yesterday.
Ni estoy aquí.
Nor am I here
porque no me hubieran
because
invitado
I had not
una
been invited
hoy.
To dinner tonight.
No, hoy hay comida también.
Today, there is a dinner.
Y yo estoy excluido.
I have been excluded.
No por ser demonio.
Not
ya
because
no
I am a demon.
Tan mal como
I have not
de
been
demonio.
So ill-treated tonight.
Pero bueno, no sé.
I don't know.
Si perjudico.
If it is because
cualquier actividad política.
I hurt a political activity if I am present. I don't know.
Pero Si me hubieran invitado,
but if I had been invited
a la alcaldía,
to the mayorship,
tenía que ir por elemental,
I would have had to attend out of mere courtesy.
Si me hubieran invitado,
if I had been invited
a la filarmónica,
to the Philharmonic Orchestra,
hubiera tenido que ir,
to the concert, I would have had to attend
cortesía,
for reasons of elementary courtesy.
De elemental paciencia.
And even out of patience.
No porque me fuera a aburrir.
Not because it was
concierto.
Going to be boring for me, that concert.
Pero óigame, eso de estar rodeado
but
de jefe
me,
de Estado todo
being
el
surrounded
tiempo,
of heads of state all the time is sometimes unbearable.
Pero sí les puedo asegurar
I can assure
cosa.
You though
que yo habría asistido a
that I would have attended
a la que me habían invitado
that dinner
amablemente
to which
los empresarios,
I was invited by the businessmen.
Y no habría faltado jamás al encuentro con ustedes.
But I would have never failed to come to this meeting with you.
Porque lo primero que hice,
because the first thing I did,
cuando se habló del programa,
when the program was brought up with me, was to say that I wanted to visit the Teresa Hotel and that I wanted to have an encounter with you here in Harlem.
Pero nadie podrá decir que yo inventé una reunión.
But nobody will be able to say that I invented a meeting tonight just not to attend.
Pero otros lo inventaron comida.
Others have invented dinners and things.
Y me excluyeron.
And they have left me out.
Entonces yo tuve más tiempo.
I had more time then.
Tuve más tiempo, pude cumplir más.
So I had more time free to be able to come and discharge my duty and my decision to come and see you tonight.
Pero aquella vez.
But that day,
aquella vez fueron días realmente para mí inolvidables.
I mean, those were unforgettable days for me, the days when I came to the Teresa Hotel many years ago.
Era tal la hostilidad de todas partes.
There was such hostility.
Había tanta campaña.
There was such a campaign
que yo pasaba por una zona
against our country
y me hacían así.
That I passed by one area and they did like this.
Yo no sabía qué quería decir aquello,
I didn't know what they meant by that, but I could imagine that it was something was wrong.
Pero todo cambiaba cuando llegaba a Harlem.
But everything changed when I came to Harlem. In Harlem, he did this.
Hoy hay algunos cambios, excepto algunos compatriotas nuestros que
today
todavía no se han acabado de
the
convertir a la causa
some, fellow citizens of
de la
ours
soberanía
who have not yet become
algunos,
followers of the cause of sovereignty and independence. Only a few.
Van siendo menos.
Actually, they are less and less.
Gastaron dinero, gastaron de todo.
They spent money
y buscaron no sé cuántos recursos.
And they found resources.
Me decía una periodista, ¿te sabes qué?
A journalist was telling me this evening.
Hay 58 protestas.
Do you know that there have been 57 protests against you?
Qué suerte tengo.
I said,
yo que no he visto ninguno.
I'm a lucky man. I have not seen any. I don't know where she gets the data. But I said, I have seen thousands of people saying hello.
Ahora hay gente que me saluda. En muchos lugares.
I have seen many people waving hands at me.
Sí, realmente cambios.
I've seen changes in the way people look at us.
Vivía la Guerra Fría.
Remember that in those days when I came here first, those were the days of the Cold War.
Con la revolución recién nacida.
The revolution was practically a newborn.
Eso fue en el año 60.
That was in the year 1960.
Y entonces me hicieron la vida imposible.
And then they made life very difficult for me in that hotel where I was staying.
Yo tenía todavía un poco de mentalidad guerrillera.
I still had somewhat the mentality of guerrilla.
Me voy para el patio
so I said,
de las Naciones
I'm going
Unidas.
To set up a tent in the patio of the UN.
En una casa de campaña allí.
I'm going to set up my tent there.
Seguí pensando, tuvieron contacto aquí con el Hotel Teresa.
And then it was said that we had the contact with the Teresa Hotel.
Hay una cosa mucho más estratégica.
I said there is something more strategic than that.
Irme a parar allí en el Hotel Teresa.
I'm going to stay at Teresa Hotel.
Yo sabía que iba a contar con el
I knew that here I would have the heart of the neighbors of Harlem.
Era evidente la injusticia, era evidente la discriminación.
Injustice was obvious, discrimination was obvious to me.
Y como revolucionario,
and as a revolutionary,
sabía la recepción que tendría.
I knew that I would be welcome in this neighborhood.
Por eso es lo que dijo Lincoln, se puede engañar.
I remember what Lincoln said.
A la gente,
you can deceive
a toda la gente una parte del tiempo.
All the people, part of the time.
A una parte.
Part of the people, part of the time.
Pero no se puede engañar a todo el mundo,
but not all the people, all the time.
Pero ustedes fueron la parte de la gente.
But you were the part of the people.
A quienes nunca pudieron engañar.
Who were never deceived.
Aquí contó Rosemary las personalidades que vinieron.
Rosemary here said all the personalities that came to visit me at Teresa Hotel.
Líderes internacionales.
International leaders.
Que en muestra de solidaridad.
Who in solidarity with me.
Vino Khrushchev.
Even Khrushchev came.
Sí, Khrushchev fue uno de los
yes,
primeros.
Yes, Khrushchev was one of the first leaders who came to visit me.
Y era el jefe de una superpotencia.
And he was the leader of a superpower.
Le agradezco, le reconozco.
I appreciated that gesture that he had.
Khrushchev era un hombre de origen campesino.
Khrushchev was a peasant.
Astuto.
He was a very shrewd peasant.
Simpático.
Very funny guy.
Y subió las escaleras y no desbarató aquel.
And he did not dismantle his country, by the way.
Yo por la escalera, los ascensores del Teresa encantado y después vinieron otros muchos líderes.
He became a leader, but after that many of the leaders came
Nehru.
To visit. Nehru.
Una de las grandes figuras.
One of the great leaders.
Historical
leaders, one of the great politicians.
Y vino Nasser.
And Nasser.
Vino Nkrumah.
And Nkrumah.
Uno de los más prestigiosos. Que vinieron numerosos dirigentes.
Many
al Teresa.
Many great leaders came to visit me at the Teresa Hotel.
Grosera maniobra de hostilidad.
They rejected that gross maneuver of hostility against our country. It did not pay off for anyone. Actually, it offered me an unforgettable memory and a reason for feeling eternal gratitude
hacia el pueblo norteamericano
for the American people
porque veía en usted
because I could see in you the best representative of the virtues of the American people.
Se creó una historia. ¿Y saben cuánto tiempo hace de eso?
And you know how long ago that was?
35
years ago.
Así que se cumple el 35
aniversario. So this is the 35th anniversary
de mi visita.
Of my visit, my first visit.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11:58 a.m. Next up, stay tuned for Jazz Lives. You hear about new and interesting authors on KBOO nearly every day. Through the PALS Partner Program, you can contribute to KBOO while shopping for the books you hear about over the air. We earn a percentage of each dollar you spend at PALS Online. The same goes for books you sell to PALS, which you can also do on their website. To use KBOO's Partner Program, go to kboo.fm/PALS to look for books today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of 15X, Friday, February 28th from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. 15X is a local hip-hop show that features a wide variety of local hip-hop and R&B artists from Portland. Again, that's 15X on Friday, February 28th from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, we are Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Our show is on hiatus until May, and until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. There is no experience necessary to join, just an enthusiasm for API content and stories through the medium of community radio. If you are Asian or Pacific Islander and are interested in joining, please contact us at pacificunderground@kboo.org, all one word. Or message us on Instagram at @PACUnderground.
KBOO, Portland 90.7 FM. It's time for Jazz Lives.